This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Matt and Brett here today. Hi, Brett. How are you?
I'm all right. How about you?
It's a lovely day, man. It's nice outside.
Great outside.
Oh,
yes.
Lovely. If you didn't get a chance out there, we hope you have a little bit of fun this weekend. Sounds like it's going to be great weather. What is the weather look? You did the weather earlier. What did the weather look like?
Pretty much 70s and 80s. Not too hot, not too warm. Gonna be good.
Brett did his deal with the devil, so we get nice weather. Thanks, yeah. Brett. Good luck on that whole soul thing. Yeah, hopefully that's
not going to be turned bad. 70s, 80s. The only bad thing is the mosquitoes are coming out.
Hey, they are. Oh, yeah. I went over to my daughter had a game over at the soccer fields by the Perpich School. It was a night game right by, I think there's a little marsh in there. It got a little rough. It's starting to get there. But yeah, what, 80 today, 82 tomorrow, 80 tomorrow, 82 on Saturday, 81 on Sunday, 85 on Monday. There you go. Are you going to be doing your, grilling this weekend now that we are officially in Memorial Day weekend here?
I can't grill at mine, unfortunately, so no. The only thing I can grill is on a George Foreman grill. So
that's okay, you don't have like a patio grill or anything like that?
No, I'm on an upper deck condo, so no.
Okay.
Yeah. That might be against the policy to burn down the entire complex.
Don't do that. Do not do that. But you know what you could do?
Yes.
There are parks around where there have these, geological formation grills where basically clean these things off in about 100 years. You let that sucker fire up for a while, all right? Burn off a good tons of that grease from the 1870s. Once you get down to basically a metal, then you can start cooking on that. So good luck. You could do that. We need to get, I need to get you? I'm going to buy you a little hibachi so you can just go out to one of the lakes, man.
Yeah.
Find a little spot out there. There you go. A little grilling. Get you the ladies. I'll tell you that. There you go. Everyone likes the person with the grill as long as they're not like running into it or hammocking over it. Although that all of a sudden gets to give me a good idea for some fun this weekend. Anyway, no, Matt is not suggesting he's going to put a hibachi grill under a hammock in a park in Minneapolis to deal with the hipsters. No.
Oh, I knew you were going to go to the hammocks. There we go.
I see him around, man. I'm disappointed. I saw one in February, and I'm like, did they leave it up there? Nope. It's winter. A winter hammock.
I don't remember it being even like warm for this February either.
It wasn't.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yeah. What are you doing? Stop it. Stop. No. 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 I don't want to hear about your organic goat cheese. No. I don't want to hear about your decorative scarf. No. I don't want to hear how cool your belt is. I don't care. Is it hemp? Is it? I don't care. Stop it, hipsters. You're trying too hard. This is why you're having problems. Just be yourself. You don't have to impress everyone. Trust us. It's worked for us. It can work for you. We, of course, are not here tomorrow or on Monday. So happy Memorial Day to everyone out there. And I'll be taking part of some Memorial Day's activities on Monday. The show tomorrow, this is the Nyland show, right? Paul Nyland?
Yeah, that is pretty much the entire first hour where you are speaking with Paul Nyland.
Paul Nyland from Lifeline Ukraine, the service that offers mental health care to the people of Ukraine. And it was a stark interview, to say the least. And then it's also we talked about the MIA and the Caravaggio over there, right? We talked to the curator of what is a very rare occurrence to get a Caravaggio out of Italy. And we've got it on display over at MIA right now.
And it's there almost the entire summer. I believe it's sometime in August is when we have it through. So you still got some time to get out there and see it.
Nice there. We will also get to, on Monday, the show from Tuesday this week, where we basically recap all the successes. We spiked the football a little bit for the DFL on that show. So we'll talk about that coming up here. That'll be on Tuesday with Cooligan as well, him getting his thoughts in on that as well. So that's all this weekend. Have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend, and we hope you do enjoy that. But until that time, we've got a show to do today. Coming up here in just a little bit, this first hour, I'm going to deal a lot with the third anniversary of the death of George Floyd. And joining me in just a little bit is going to be David Murrah. The Stories of Whiteness Tells Itself, Racial Myths and Our American Narratives. Basically, it's a book that takes on how white people basically convince themselves that they're really not the villain. And it's interesting, a very interesting book. We'll talk to David here coming up here in a little bit. So on the day itself, on the 25th, George Floyd was killed that evening, and it wasn't until the next morning that all of a sudden the video came to light, and it was, to say the least, disturbing. George Floyd didn't deserve that. No human being deserved what happened to him. And there have been a lot of people who have spent time thinking about what happened there. I've tried to listen to some of the shows from back then. You can listen to them on there on SoundCloud. We have them all up there. You can go back and listen to those shows. I've tried to listen to them. I can't. It's just such raw emotion and anger at where the Minneapolis police had sunk to. And the bottom of the freaking barrel by far. And then to see the destruction of our city, a lot of it done by white supremacists who invaded our town. And then the racist screaming, "Black people stole a tube of toothpaste." Blah! What I remember dramatically about that was about one of the first times. Remember, this is 2020, and we were well into COVID times at this point. And I remember the COVID and just kind of trying to figure out what we were going to do. I mean, it was at the time the schools had decided not to do graduations, hadn't done anything like that. And as a matter of fact, we did two high schools, Hopkins and Edina's graduation. We announced all the people that graduated because they could not have a graduation ceremony. We actually, just called up the schools and said, here's what it costs to keep the radio station on the air during that time. You want it, it's yours. And, those two radio stations, those two schools took up the offer there. And it was kind of one of the least we could do. We were trying to get through this, and then all of a sudden came this tragedy. In the last year, I live in the suburbs. I'm a big white guy, and I live in the suburbs. I have noticed a very disturbing trend that really, in my mind, is kind of an effort by right-wing elements to dismiss and change the narrative of what happened with George Floyd. And it's very hard when I keep hearing white male suburbanites come to me, and when you bring up George Floyd, the first thing they say is, "Why did they burn down that police precinct?" That's the first thing they say. That's pretty much the only thing they say. And kind of in this argument of you know what, everything else would have been fine if they had, they just, you know, if, you know, why did they burn down the police precinct? And I've gotten to the point, I've been asked this question, by the way, at least six times in various different locations by white male suburbanites who basically have no connection to each other. I can't figure out where this is coming from. My guess is it's coming from conservative elements, social media posts, right-wing media. You know, it's like, yeah, before you feel sorry for George Floyd, you know, like, there was a police precinct that was burned out. You know, that kind of narrative stuff. But the question is basically the same. Why did the third precinct get burned down? Why? Why did that happen? And I'll look at them and I'll say to them, did anything else happen that bothered you at all during this whole thing? Because I got something big that happened. Let me recap. And as I will say, I'll try to keep my emotions in check here, but you know, it does get kind of a little bit emotional when I point out to them that as you're so concerned about the police precinct, let me remind you that four police officers murdered a man in the streets. The black population, the minority population of this state for since the beginning of white people getting here, have talked about white abuse of the people, have talked about this over and over again to white America, basically saying, that's not really happening. That didn't happen. What are you talking about? The black community for years had been talking about the over-aggressive and viciousness of the Minneapolis Police Department. Something that numerous stories since George Floyd have pointed out indeed did exist. Even having a prospective police officer try to become a police officer, being told you had to attack and beat a black man in the street to really be part of the club. That was the Rolling Stone article, if you hadn't read that one. And the black population of the city kept saying, this is going on, this is going on. And the white population of the city said, no, it's not. You're confused. And then suddenly here is 9.5 minutes of video of police murdering a man in the streets of Minneapolis, 38th in Chicago. They murdered him. They murdered him. They sat on his back. He was not a threat to them. They basically killed him. They with intent, it seems like. Well, and as courts and juries have determined. This, even though with this 9.5 minutes of video evidence, This was still not enough for the police department to become honest and say they had a problem. No, the same police department, the same Minneapolis Police Department, who consistently sat there and whenever one of these shootings happened, went out there and first talked about how the police officers deserve commendations. And let me tell you about the victim who's really a gangbanger drug dealer. Oh my God. And they would vilify anyone. It was a precision tactic the Minneapolis Police Department under Bob Kroll had gotten to perfection. Attack the victim while you praise the culprits. And they tried it with this one, and no one was buying it because we had the video. And Bob Kroll came out even afterwards saying, these officers deserve their jobs back, and Bob Kroll, George Floyd was a horrible person. None of it mattered. Because we had the video proof, finally the video proof of what the black community had been saying forever, which is the police were brutalizing them. And then we get 3 days later, the Stallings incident, which shows they didn't learn their freaking lesson. Did not learn their lesson. Did not learn their lesson. That white supremacy seems to have at least a white supremacist-esque tone had infiltrated the Minneapolis Police Department. That basically they did indeed look down upon the black people of the city as needing to be put under control and under their boot, which they did actually under the knee in the case of George Floyd. And they did this and still belligerently came on out and said, our officers deserve commendations and George Floyd was the victim. Boom. Boom. That is what happened. That even in the face of undeniable evidence that the black community was right all along, that the police were overly aggressive and abusing the people of the city, they still kept trying to get away with it. Under the leadership of Bob Kroll, that jackass. Boom. Boom. Everything that happened after that, the linchpin, the pivot point, the cause and effect, was the murder of George Floyd by four police officers on the streets of the city. That is the beginning and the priority. So when I hear white suburban men looking at me and trying to say to me, well, why did the precinct have to get burned down? Hey, that was a tragedy too, and I'll talk about that a little bit more after the break, but the reality is your first big outrage should be and should always be the Minneapolis police were caught on camera for 9.5 minutes murdering a man in the streets. And it was only after the video evidence came on out that anyone in that police department started showing any level of remorse, saying maybe we were a little heavy-handed this time. You think? You think? I'll take a break. I'm going to come on back. When I do return here, let's talk a little bit more about the burning of the precinct, because there's also just kind of an argument that they don't want to accept that the reality is our city was invaded. And we'll talk about that. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Starting this show out talking about the third anniversary of the death of George Floyd at the hands of the Minneapolis Police Department in the streets of Minneapolis. And the fact that there definitely is this attempted effort. And like I said, this is perfect while my author that's coming in here in just a little bit, Dave Murrah, is going to join us. Stories that whiteness tells itself to maintain racist standards. As far as these beliefs that they have, that it really is interesting to watch how I've had multiple white suburban men basically try to argue the biggest problem was the burning of the precinct, as opposed to the clear evidence that the black community had been right all along, that police officers were murdering people in the streets. And just in case you didn't realize that, if you're trying to argue, well, that was one time, the Stallings case really kind of undercuts your whole argument there. Your Stallings case there. And I think it's fair for us to look back on any shooting involving a black person in Minneapolis and ask, how legitimate was it? Because it clearly seems to have been a terrorist campaign encroached by the Minneapolis Police Department on the black community, which led up to George Floyd. And I, you know, once again, I think that there are some changes that are coming. But when you have Tamir Rice getting shot in a no-knock warrant, and you have, you know, it does seem to me that it's going to be slow and steady. And the reality is I think that considering the police officers who have left the department, I think there are some people who are realizing the change is coming. Now, let's go back to this entire argument. Why did they have to burn down the police precinct? They burned down a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff got burned down. Now, we should mention that there clearly was a coordinated campaign by white supremacists, the umbrella men that came into our town, that, you know, the first fire, the first damage that was done was by one of these guys. And to my knowledge, I think they know exactly who these people are. Whether they've been able to find them, I'm not quite sure. But I think they have found most of them. The vast majority of the damage that was done to our city was done by people invading our city. And that's just a fact. When Governor Walz brought that point up immediately, not because it was truthful, but because Republicans wanted the narrative of black people are doing this, they called him a liar. They said, that's just not true. The reality is when you look at all the arrests and you look at all the people, not only are the vast majority of them not from Minneapolis, the vast majority of them are not black. They were white people that invaded our city and attacked under the guise of trying to start some sort of race war. I remember driving through the city, the burnt out city streets of Minneapolis. I remember that. I remember the sadness I felt to see something that was reminiscent of a war zone in our own city. If you're going to look at me and ask the question about the precinct, I'm going to ask you, so why are you up there? Aren't you more upset about white supremacists invading our town? Because then usually the next thing, when I bring up the George Floyd thing, and they're like, oh, of course, Matt, of course, George Floyd was bad and all, but the burning of the precinct, yeah, by white supremacists. Well, sure, but, you know, they looted a Target and stole some toothpaste. Did they? Considering what you had the black community for decades screaming about police brutality, not just the black community, the Native American community, the Hispanic community, all the minorities complaining about how they got treated by the Minneapolis Police Department. And finally, empirical evidence that backed up those claims. Empirical evidence that, yes, indeed, there was indeed a huge racism problem within the Minneapolis Police Department. And the city exploded. Considering how angry I would be if my race was kept down with a foot on the neck for as long as the black community is, frankly, I'm surprised there wasn't more damage done. And I'm not saying it justifies it. I'm not. It was bad that the precinct indeed did burn down, that white supremacists came into our town and started lighting fires all over the place. Yeah, that's bad. And yeah, looting is bad. I don't think that necessarily that helped anyone. But I'm not going to, because I'm so freaking desperate to turn the narrative into the poor police. No. I'm not going to do that. This was a god-awful tragedy that could have been prevented by the white population of the state believing the black population when they were saying this is going on. It could have been prevented by a police, you know, a police department that hadn't been emboldened by conservative policies that basically said that you can never be touched. You can do anything you want to, and there is nothing they can do about it. A clear implication, and you can tell by kind of some of the actions here, that a white supremacy mentality and esque kind of thing had permeated that police department. The fact that most of the people in the police department despised the city that they worked for and had no problem taking it. Remember when they were talking about, well, shouldn't you live in the city? And she's like, how dare you think I subject my child to this city? What are you talking about? Nope. It is. It is an American tragedy. And I'm hoping that not just George Floyd, but other things have changed the way we look at things and realizing that, frankly, just because it comes from the black community doesn't mean it's wrong, white America. It doesn't. And maybe you shouldn't just spend all your time looking for the people that you can try to use to invalidate the legitimate claims of impropriety that were portrayed upon the black community and George Floyd. I can look at you with a straight face and say, all of it was 1,000 pounds of freaking horrible. The death of George Floyd at the hands of the Minneapolis police at 9.5 minutes, where they clearly did not care about him. The ensuing riots, the white supremacists that invaded our town, burned down buildings, including a police precinct, and the looting. And the damage done to our image and the damage done to our city. It's all horrible. But I'm not going to sit here and just ignore the fact that what started this was four police officers murdering George Floyd in the street 3 years ago. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. David Murrow, when we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Joining me right now is David Murrow. As a matter of fact, we actually talked about one of the books he was involved with earlier. He's a poet, writer of creative nonfiction and fiction, critic and playwright. He's the author of Strange Journey, Race, Identity, and Narrative Craft in Writing, and also as well, Where the Body Meets Memory, An Odyssey of Race, Sexuality, and Identity. He is the co-editor with Carolyn Holbrook, who we had on the air when this book came out, We Are Meant to Rise, The Voices for Justice from Minneapolis to the World. He lives in Minneapolis. He's kind enough to join us today to talk about his latest book, The Stories Whiteness Tells Itself, Racial Myths and Our American Narratives. David, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And I do want to mention, you do have an event that's going to be coming on up here. This is going to be over at Eastside Freedom Library on June 13th from 7 till 10:30. You're going to be talking about this book. And congratulations. This is a weighty subject, to say the least. What prompted you to say, you know what, someone needs to address this? Because I agree with you wholeheartedly. It is amazing to find how these narratives within white racism have basically been with us a long time.
Yes, well, I had been writing throughout my life about race, but when Philando Castile was killed on Larpenteur Road, mm-hmm. I, along with various other members of the Twin Cities community, was very upset at what happened. I knew people who knew him, and so I began writing about what happened on Larpenteur Road in his encounter with Officer Yanez. And I realized that I couldn't really understand it, and I don't think other people could understand what happened unless we went back into American history and understanding the way we construct narratives around race in this country. And I was struck at the time with the fact that in conservative circles, they would say things like, it doesn't matter whether he was guilty or innocent of anything. It was just like the police stopped him and he was shot, and that's just the way things are.
Yeah.
And I began reading, and I began reading things like how in the 19th century, right after the Civil War, when black people became citizens, the question of, you know, who are black people? What, you know, how are they a citizen? They did these studies where any crime committed by a black person was considered evidence of the inherent criminality of black people. Mm-hmm. But when these same sociologists or pseudo-sociologists, false sociologists, did their studies, if a white person committed a crime, that was just attributed to the individual white person. It didn't cast a stain on white people. It didn't say anything in general about white people. And generally, it was explained by social economic circumstances. They were poor. They were out of work. And so things like that contribute to the way we construct these narratives in society. I began going back to Jefferson, to Lincoln, to Reconstruction, and also to fictional and movie narratives about our past.
What you're explaining there is, I pointed this out the other day. We have a woman, I think she's up in North Branch. She's a white woman who basically defrauded the system and, you know, stole, you know, over $1 million of fraud. I mean, pure fraud. You don't even hear about that story. But the Feeding Our Future story, which is basically the same exact story, got wide coverage. Why? Because there was a lot more black people involved in there, and that was the driving need. Well, we can't do this because we shouldn't even be trying to help these people because of this. Meanwhile, a white woman does it up in North Branch, and hardly even a peep from the media. I mean, it really is interesting how even still today, those narratives that you just described are very present wherever you look on how we even just talk about the news of crimes in this state.
No, and if somebody robs something from a, you know, convenience store and they're shot, no, you know, it's just like that's what happened.
Yeah.
And yet people can steal millions of dollars, right? And oftentimes they never go to jail because they can pay for great lawyers. And so, but I think one of the things I realized in writing this book, the story Whiteness Tells Itself, is that racism works in our society at a very oftentimes deep and unconscious level. You know, take, for instance, you know, there's a rule which I think exists in our society, which is that white knowledge is always valid, objective, true, and official. White knowledge is valid, true, objective, and official. But black knowledge is always invalid, subjective, false or suspicious, and unofficial unless white people decree it's official. And this rule exists whether we're talking about black accounts of narratives of their encounters with the police. We know that black people wait longer and oftentimes don't receive pain medication for the same conditions. And when they do receive pain medication, they receive less pain medication than white people for the same conditions. And so what that means is physicians or ER people don't necessarily accept the narratives of black people saying, I feel pain. Mm-hmm. And so this evaluation of knowledge goes everywhere in this society. It goes to when Ron DeSantis says that the governor of Florida says that the AP history African-American studies course lacks educational value. Well, it's like the course was created by African-American writers and African-American scholars with PhDs. DeSantis doesn't have a PhD in African-American mm-hmm. studies. He's not an African-American writer. He hasn't studied the African-American experience. And yet he believes that he can deem this course not educational. And the other thing about it is, let's think about what happened when the Africans came to America. The slave owner said, you can't teach your language. You can't teach your culture. You can't teach your history. What is DeSantis saying to African Americans? No, you're not qualified to teach your own history, your own culture. It's the same thing.
Same thing hundreds of years later. I your book is broken down. You talk about part one, the present moment. You talk about Philando Castile. And I'm glad you did, because I remember that. And I remember sitting here saying, okay, wait a minute, none of this makes any damn sense. What do you mean you put five rounds into the guy? You know, he just, you know, he apparently was telling you he had, you know, he had a concealed carry and you shot him. And not only that, you know, there was a lot of ignoring and almost, you know, excuse making that went from everyone. I mean, the jury member having a member from that owned a gas station that was servicing the police departments, which is a clear, you know, conflict of interest there. I was shocked that she was on there. And then, you know, and of course that the fact that the NRA, if this was a white person that was shot with a gun, would have been all over it, but didn't even say a peep. The fact that Philando Castile got done.
He had a valid license for the gun. And one of the things when I talk in public about Philando Castile is he was stopped 55 times in 10 years by the police.
God.
His mother says that it was more like 80 times, but some of these stops weren't official. You know, when I speak to white audiences, I ask, how many times have you been stopped in the last 10 years by the police? 5, some hands go up. 10, fewer hands. 15, fewer hands. I get to 20, and nobody's been stopped 20 times in the last 10 years by the police. Mm-hmm. He was stopped 55 to 80 times by the police in 10 years. And he must have felt like, you know, there's no escaping. I'm bound to be, you know, killed or something terrible happened to me if I'm being stopped this many times. And so the other thing I felt is that he was under this constant threat, which black people feel, of driving while black. And yet when he worked at the school that he worked in, St. Paul, everybody spoke about what a great guy he was. One parent described him as Mr. Rogers with dreadlocks, that he knew the names of all the children. He knew what food they liked. He knew their allergies. And he treated all of these children, black, white, at the school, with great love. And so people thought he was a good guy. But to think about the fact that he was constantly dealing with the police like this, and yet he still was able not to treat the world with anger and resentment. And his mother talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he was really much more remarkable than even people who were well disposed to him, if they were white, would understand, because they didn't realize he'd been stopped 55 to 80 times in the last 10 years by the police.
It is, you know, remarkable you're joining me on the third anniversary of George Floyd, because I think if not for Philando Castile, I don't know if the city would have exploded as it did after George Floyd, because once again, we had video evidence of what the black community had been saying for all these years. They get mistreated. We had video empirical proof that they were telling the truth, that here is four police officers murdering a man in the streets. And the thing which was crazy was I just remember how the police department still kept going with their usual narrative that George Floyd was the bad guy, the police officers deserved commendations, he was a bad person, he got what he deserved. And I was like, and I think that was, you know, that moment there when we realized, no, none of that makes any damn sense. And the fact today that you still have a lot of people, especially on the right, that still want to turn it into the only thing that matters was the precinct getting burnt down, not the fact that four police officers murdered George Floyd in the streets.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, defend the destruction of property during
not at all, strike, not at all.
But we have to think, you know, there's been the rise of what is called white Christian nationalism, and really, it's not Christianity people are talking about. You know, when they talk about, you know, for instance, there was a man in New York subway, Jordan McNeely, who, you know, had mental issues, and this. White Marine on the train put him in a chokehold and he died. And people are calling him a good Samaritan. Well, if you know anything about Christianity, you know, no, the good Samaritan was somebody was beaten and in the ditch, and the good Samaritan didn't kill the person.
No.
The good Samaritan attended to his wounds and brought him to his house and fed him. So how do we get from that parable, which is one of generosity and love and warmth, to a good Samaritan, somebody who chokes somebody to death? I don't understand it, really, on some basic level.
I want to bring up the fact that we have basically just today, Wisconsin Representative Glenn Grothman is on the House floor complaining that Biden isn't nominating enough straight white guys as judges. We had Steve Drazkowski, the senator in the state of Minnesota, complain earlier this year about how the equality provision doesn't do enough for white people. You know, and now you've got this whole thing where if you talk about in anything that goes against him, whether it's black or the LGBTQ community, the first thing is to accuse you of being the worst thing in the world, to basically turn their irrational arguments against you into something they consider to be valid. It really is disturbing to see how much what you have pointed out here is still, I mean, coming from hundreds of years ago, is still in place today, because, and you can't shake this. I don't know how we're going to be able to shake this.
Well, first of all, the vast majority of federal judges are straight white males.
Yes.
Still. I mean, that's just a fact. But what I think people don't realize is the value of diversity. And in the stories whiteness tells itself, I introduced them. I'm a third-generation Japanese-American. My parents were imprisoned by the United States government at ages 11, 15 during World War II because people suspected them, the community, of being spies. Now, no one was ever convicted of any espionage, and in the 1980s, they discovered that the military had actually done a study which concluded the Japanese community was not a military threat, but lied to the public. Now, even while these families were in prison, what America realized is we don't have any white Japanese speakers. We have white Italian speakers. We have white German speakers. So we have to go to this population that we've imprisoned to find Japanese speakers. And I've done a documentary about this called Armed with Language, which is a Twin Cities Public Television Emmy-winning documentary. And General MacArthur's chief of intelligence, General Willoughby, said that these Japanese-American linguists shortened the war in the Pacific by 2 years and saved 1 million American lives. And many of them did this even while they signed up after being imprisoned by the American government and their families in prison. And what this shows is the value of diversity, just like the Navajo Code Talkers, because people know about them because of the movie. Diversity is our strength. It's not our weakness. And diversity should not be a threat, because we're a creative society because we're so diverse. People want to come from all over the world because we are diverse, because they believe they can be part of America. And why do we want to throw all that away? Just it is not useful. Mm-hmm. It's just stupid. And that's the other thing about racism. Racism is really stupid and inefficient. It doesn't make society run better. It doesn't make businesses run better. It doesn't make governments run better. And I'm just a level of practicality. You know, these Japanese-American linguists who studied at Fort Snelling were a valuable asset to America. And yet America treated them as if they were spies, treated their families as if they were spies. And one of them said, you know, there's a big contradiction here, because, like, we're working for the Military Intelligence Service, and yet, you know, they still kept us in prison.
Yeah. And by the way, I always think, you know, racism is the foil of the weak people who basically, when they look in the mirror, have to blame someone else for all their problems. And so they eagerly jump into the worst of our mentalities and our psyches so that they can basically make themselves feel better about being a screw up. And I think that is, and I will stand by that, because I think that is, you know, there's just this ingratiated element here, and it's taught by parents. It's taught by this, because it, you know, it wasn't you, it was them. And that's, and I find it to be horrible. Your book, by the way, and we don't have much more time here, but you talked about the present case starting with Philando Castile. It talks about a great deep dive into the history of where these racist standards came from. You talk about part three here, where do we go from here? And I don't want to necessarily get into that, but I do think one of the hardest parts I've found is trying to convince people that just because we have equality, that doesn't mean you're giving anything up. That it's not pie. You know, it's not everyone gets a slice of pie. It's just, we're going to make sure everyone gets treated the same way. And the way that so many people look at that as a threat to them, because I think down deep inside, they know they got an advantage over everyone else.
Yeah. And here's the thing I do want to say about talking about this. And I say this in my book, The Story's Whiteness Tells Itself, is I don't think we move people by shaming and guilting them. I think we move people through knowledge and love. And so, you know, when I'm writing a book about the existence of systemic racism in America, I want people to think about that question, think about the proof I'm laying down in the book about why that might be the case. But I don't want the individual white person to go, like, I'm a bad person. Like, that's not my purpose in writing the book. I don't know you. I don't know whether you're a good or bad person. That's not really the point. The point is, like, blacks and whites smoke marijuana at exactly the same rate when it was illegal, you know, as it is in other states. And yet blacks were four times more likely to be arrested than the white people, right, for the same crime.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they were arrested, they were far more likely to go to trial, far more likely to be convicted, far more likely to serve sentences, and far more likely to serve longer sentences for the same crime. And you can't look at that statistic, those statistics, and say it's not systemic. So it's not about you as an individual. It's about you recognizing that we have a system of racial bias and that no one ultimately benefits from it. Because what you're doing when you do that is you're not really allowing the capacity of citizens to contribute to society. You're actually shackling people's ability to contribute. And we should all be able to come to the table and be who we are. And that shouldn't be a threat. That should be part of the gift and the greatness of America.
David, your book is so good. I could only dream that the people that need to read this book will. I mean, I really do. And I think it is a well-done book, and I think you nail it 1,000%, and I think it is important. And yeah, you are definitely, your presentation is a lot better than mine would ever be. That's for sure. The story's whiteness tells itself, racial myths in our American narrative. David Murrah. Once again, I do want to mention he's going to be at Eastside Freedom Library. This is coming up on June 13th from 7 till 10:30 p.m. to talk about this book. David, I wish I didn't have to cut this short. I want you to come on back. Let's discuss this another time if we can. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'd love to. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. David Murrah joining us. Let's take a break, get into the end of the show here for this hour. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, this book actually takes a very deep dive into Lincoln. And basically, his historical research shows that, you know, it's more kind of like when you talk about racism, Lincoln is definitely, as the Native Americans have very much clearly said, he kind of despised, because he had a chance that he could have done something about racism, but he didn't really do that. It was mainly about stopping slavery and kind of not really addressing the racism issue and the narratives that were out there. I thought that was very interesting. He's right. He is right. 100%. I wish he's not here to make people upset. He's not here to make people mad. David Murrah has written a good book that is based on evidence and historical fact and rational thought. And my God, if you know someone who's a bit of a, you know, got a little bit sometimes that these things, this is a book you should get them and tell them you really need to read. You need to read this book. I am not that person. I unfortunately get to stare deep into the darkness that is the right at times. And yeah, I don't pull any punches, and I don't know how you're going to get this, because I think the idea of the people that need to read this book actually reading this book terrifies them, because it would show them that, oh my God, this is real and this is historic and this is something that we got to solve. And the reality is, the people that are trying to make excuses for their own faults in life do not want to fix that. Hour two, that's coming up next. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. We are on signature watch, by the way. You know, it's interesting. We're on signature watch here. Did he sign? Did he actually sign the paid leave bill? I think he did. He was supposed to do that at 1:30 this afternoon.
He's got a lot of bills to sign.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. Well, okay, correct me.
Not necessarily a bad thing.
If he doesn't sign it, does it automatically become law after a certain amount of days?
I know at the federal level, isn't it like 10 days if the president doesn't act, they can enact the law without his signature?
Yeah, that I think that that's the same thing.
It's got to be at the state level, maybe a different amount of time.
Here it is. I got an email. I'll tell you what, one thing Governor Walz is really good at is messaging, man. That dude, he gets it. Did you see the image yesterday with the bill with drone coverage and, you know, you surrounded? I mean, gosh, man, Republicans only wish they could put on a show like this. Governor Walz today signed the bill providing paid family and medical leave for Minnesotans into law. Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan were joined by House Speaker Melissa Hortman, Senate Majority Leader Kerry Dietzick, legislators and advocates including Minnesota AFL-CIO President Bernie Burnham and Doran Schrantz, the Executive Director of Isaiah and Faith in Minnesota. Paid family and medical leave is about to be investing in the people and make our state and economy strong in the first place. Hoo-ah! Man! This is just an amazing session. And I'll tell you what, I'll get into it. Washington Post actually pointed out, you know, Democrats across the country should look at what Minnesota just pulled off here, because it is pretty impressive.
I mean, even Tom Hartman spent a good chunk of yesterday and today's show talking about it. Yeah, you know, people are paying attention to
Minnesota.
What we're doing.
Well, and you know, it's one of those things. It's one of those things. So I gotta touch on something I did yesterday. Do you remember Johnny Crybaby? This is who is this guy? The guy that doesn't want to be here in Minnesota anymore. He's gonna beg to leave. The guy that did the Minnesota Star Tribune editorial. This is a guy that he's made a lot of money. Howard Root, who basically was a guy that fancied himself like a master political strategist by the sounds of it. And so when he made donations to Republican campaigns, which I kind of don't think the Star Tribune really kind of published that this guy was a Republican hack when they published his, I'm leaving Minnesota and taking all my toys with me, editorial. You know, basically, I think they left a lot of this out. And he and Broadcorp went back and forth because Broadcorp absolutely nailed the fact that the Republican Party was screwing up. And Howard Root, it seems like to me, I'm wondering more if Howard Root's leaving just because he's so embarrassed about how bad things went last year. I don't know. He put out his little temper tantrum letter in the strip about how Minnesota show unfair to millionaires, so he sent it to Florida. Good luck. Oh, God. Oh, just you want to get a road repair. You got to pay for road maintenance down there. You got to pay for like the fire department in some of those communities. Good luck getting insurance on your house. They don't even, you're in Hurricane Alley down there, man. And they're saying 17 storms this year, 17 named storms.
17?
17.
Wow.
Good luck. No, all our best. And by the way, you'll discover soon why pretty much everyone that moves away from Minnesota flies back to Minneapolis and Rochester for healthcare. You're about to find out that you got cancer. Well, I got some beef jerky here for you. Let's see if that works. You know, good luck. Good luck. Beef jerky. Delicious. I don't know. I don't think it cures cancer. But he is leaving. Here is the interesting thing. Now, I pointed out and mocked this clown car yesterday. And I don't have any problem taking Howard to town. Well, we're going to miss you. Did he think that we were all going to be like, oh, God, not Howard. Not Howard. Repeal everything. We're about to lose Howard. Oh, God, no. Not that. Let the door hit your ass on the way out there, Howie. Okay, toodles. Now, I do sincerely mean this. I do sincerely mean this. If you really hate it here, you got one trip on the spinning rock, okay? You got one trip. Go find your happy place. Whatever that is doing, go find your happy place. You know, would you sit at home every night watching a TV channel you just don't like when you have 400 freaking options out there? Of course not. Go find the channel that you want. I've been enjoying Netflix because they've got the old airport movies on, and I watched the original one with Nancy Nelson in it right there. But I'm watching Airport 75, which is, by the way, so racially inappropriate, it's not even funny. There's a scene when they're wheeling the sick girl onto the plane. And I think it's Gloria Swanson, the actress Gloria Swanson, looks at the sick girl. And as she walks on by, I swear to God, I had to stop the movie and stop because I was laughing for about 20 minutes. The sick girl, they're wheeling her on the plane because they got to get her to this kidney transplant in Los Angeles from Dulles. She wheels past Gloria Swanson. Gloria Swanson says, I have 3 kids, 7 grandkids. Thank God they're all healthy. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Wow, that's quite a line.
What? God! Sucks to be you, kid. Sucks to be you. Seriously, go watch it. And I'm like, wow. Now, every time Charlton Heston comes up, I'm Mystery Science Theater 3000-ing it and just like, guns, 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 guns. I have no, like, whenever someone's talking to him on the phone, I always put that in the background. That line from Gloria Swanson, that has not aged well, kind of like Gloria Swanson.
I don't think that was good at any point.
You should hear Eric Estrada is the third pilot in the thing. Remember from Chips, Eric Estrada?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You should hear the racist crap that he has. He's going along with it back then. Oh, my God. It is a treat to go watch. And by the way, they're all like, yeah, we're going to have sex. I'm going to force myself on you later. See you then. Okay. Like, Jesus. It's oh, my God. Kind of like CPAC, I'm guessing. God, I don't know. Damn. damn, I'm a cold, heartless bastard, aren't I? Dear God, Gloria Swanson looks at the sick kid going past. Three kids and seven grandkids. Thank God they're all healthy. Dear Lord. Dear Lord. Oh, and then here comes the nun with the guitar. Oh, my God. Watching Airport 75 makes me appreciate Airplane so much better. Airplane is such a great film.
Oh, if you watch them back to back, maybe God. That could be the experience to go with. Yeah. Probably Airplane, you got to watch second, though, right?
You got to watch Airplane second.
Yeah.
Because there's just so many jokes that refer to Airport 75. Anyway, that's where I'm watching my TV. I'm enjoying Netflix. I am not watching, you know, the Lifetime Movie Network or the Hallmark Channel. For God, is Hallmark Channel still playing Christmas movies? No.
Oh, that's got to be a year-round endeavor for them, doesn't it?
Oh, God. The Christmas that came in June. Oh, God, no. Stop it. Stop it, Hallmark Channel.
Better copyright that for some royalties when they make it.
They've already made probably six sequels to it.
Oh, yeah. We might be on like part seven of it. Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. God. Just no. I'm not going to watch a channel I don't want to watch. I'm going to watch what I do want to watch. By the way, they had on the TV Plus, they had the Doctor Who, classic Doctor Who channel. Just watch that all the time.
Well, they have a whole channel dedicated.
Saw Bach in here, Greg Bach in here. He and I are both Doctor Who fans. Was watching that all the time. They took it off there. I am furious.
They took it off?
They're furious with it, man.
Oh.
Furious with it. Anyway, BCs, go make yourself happy. Find your happy place. If you are not happy in Minnesota, then Howie, go. Go find your happy place. Dead serious. Trust us, there are going to be enough people, after all the stuff the DFL has done for the citizens of the state, there's going to be enough people coming into the state. It's so funny, people are talking about, oh, they're going to move their business right across the border into Fargo. I said, yeah, good luck getting employees, because every employee in Fargo is going to be wanting to work in Minnesota at that point. Paid family leave, are you kidding me? It's called a paradox. All the workers want to be in Minnesota, and all the business people who are weak and don't support their state really are trying to ship their businesses across the border. Good luck with all that. Anywho, so this guy puts out this pity story about I'm moving away to Florida, and I mock him for it. So here's the new trend, okay? And this brings up a larger issue with Republicans. I am getting grief because of... apparently, it's not him talking about what a hellscape Minnesota is and he has to leave. It's me mocking him. That's driving him away. That you should be doing much more to keep these people here. Why aren't you doing more? Matt, you're the bad guy. Wait a second here. So the guy who basically has a temper tantrum editorial in the Star Tribune, saying, I'm leaving, I'm taking my toys, and I'm going to Florida. Well, actually, I think he said Tennessee or South Carolina. Well, still, good luck there. Good luck. He's moving down over that way. Me basically saying, bye, is somehow I'm the bad guy, that I should be more welcoming. No. This guy was the guy that started it. I'm just mocking him. That's my right. And the reality is I have a lot of reasons to mock this guy for doing this, and that's if you want to know the truth. But it is just, if this, I could say this, this points out something that the Republicans have become. I am amazed at how many times I will deal with a Republican where they'll call you and he's like, you're horrible, you're a commie, you're a Marxist, oh, you're a pedophile, oh, you want to kill babies and drink their blood, you're a horrible person. And I'll say, oh, you're a jackass. And then all of a sudden it changes. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I was just standing here minding my own business. And Matt McNeil called me a jackass, an unprovoked attack out of nowhere. How dare you? How dare you? Oh. Speaking of Gloria Swanson. You're welcome. You're welcome. But it's the truth. This is what they do now. They'll attack and attack and attack, and you'll just say, you're a jerk. Oh, my God. Did you see that? They came after me. They're kind of broken people, man. I get it. In Minnesota, it's got to be hard to look into the mirror and realize that, yeah, not only did the DFL just deliver, but it's probably going to be pretty hard for you guys to start winning back this state. You're sure not going to win it back by attacking Target. You're not going to win it vilifying Target. Wessenberg, did you see the Wessenberg? He's got a new tweet out there where he basically, and once again, I'm just going to call you out, Target executives that like to write checks to the Republicans. They're not your friends. The Wessenberg tweet is it's basically using the Target logos, which, by the way, good luck with that. I'm sure that lawsuit's about to get sent your way. But Nathan Wessenberg for Senate, that's ZZ Flop. Yeah, that guy.
Oh, yes, yes.
Boycott groomers, and the O's are Target logos. Yeah. Good luck. Good luck with that. Because by offering products that are LGBTQIA plus friendly, that's basically your groomers. You're for people violating children. Jesus, man. But that's these people. And you know what? That's who these people are. They will call you the worst things. They'll call you anything. And you just say, you know what? Hey, Wessenberg, you're a freaking jackass, man. You really are. I'm a victim. I'm a victim. This was an unprovoked attack. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. God. You guys are pathetic, man. You guys are really kind of pathetic. And it's no, but keep doing it. Because it sure is winning over, especially Generation Z. They look at all this stuff and they think, yeah, that's what I want.
I bet Howie likes it, though.
Oh, well, I don't know. Well, he was, got to read that thread from Broadcorp. I reposted it on my Twitter feed. Go read that thread from Broadcorp where he basically talks about his interactions with Howie. Howie, good luck for you. I really do hope you're happy in Florida. I hope you don't mind hurricanes and drug wars. And lots of crime, and my God, paying out, you know, out of pocket expense for basic governmental services. I'm sure you're going to be saving a ton down there. Ask all those people when that hurricane hit Tampa area or south of Tampa, how they're doing down there when no one came in to help any of those people and they couldn't find any insurance. I'm sure they're living the high life now. The reality is this: you'll be happy. You're gone. We'll be happy. You're not here. It really is this simple. It's a win-win across the board, dude. And the rest of you, if you really hate it here, go. Seriously, go. Quit. Off you go. You've lost. Off you go. Find where you're going to be happy. There are, I mean, I went out to the West. There are places in Utah, Colorado, Arizona. Gorgeous. Gorgeous, stunningly beautiful. Not a lot of water and electricity, but, you know, yeah, still, you know, it's you got a good view. Go find your happy place and don't just sit here and be miserable. And you saying I'm leaving and me saying good riddance doesn't mean I'm the problem. It means I applaud your decision. And no, I'm not going to beg you to stay. Because, frankly, you don't want to be here and I don't want you here. So have a nice time. We'll be fine. It's not like tomorrow Minnesota is going to be empty. As a matter of fact, considering we're a transgender refugee state now, a women's right refugee state, my guess is in the next year or so, we're probably going to gain population. And we actually did, by the way. And that's that other narrative that's out there from the Republicans right now, where we lost all these people. Actually, if you look at the U.S. Census Bureau, we picked up 0.01 per population in 2022. We actually gained people. Funny story. Heaven forbid the facts get in your way. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Betty is in Minnetonka. She wanted to chime in this afternoon. Welcome on in, Betty.
Okay, thanks. I was just thinking about, I read Root's letter too, or commentary, and about this. And it just seems like a few generations ago, like the Daytons and the Pillsbury's and so on, knew they made their money through Minnesota, and they paid it back with their foundations and stuff.
Yeah. No, they...
And nowadays, they take what they can get, and then they head off to some hellscape that they think is good.
Well, and Betty, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call very much there. Now, I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, I got an email. God, that was about 6 years ago, 7 years ago. It was from a CFO of a company out in the West Side. And she had asked that I not mention her name and I not mention the company. She had started there with the original owner. And she explained that the original owner retired and his son took over. And she basically did a long, deep dive into what had happened to the company. And that basically it was clear to her as the CFO, chief financial officer, that the company was no longer about the company and making a good product and making sure you had good employees and making sure you serviced your suppliers. It was basically about the son, the new executives who he brought in, a bunch of his buddies, who basically all of a sudden were their salaries were skyrocketing, their cars were all of a sudden these, you know, $70,000, $80,000 company cars. That it was kind of clear, and staff was cut and stuff like this. No, it's just you're in a different age. The 1980s screwed up a lot of corporate America with the idea that the greed is good, because they saw Wall Street and they saw that speech from Michael Douglas, and that was supposed to be he's the villain, and they're like, wait a second here. This guy's onto something here. What do you mean we can install it? And I'm sorry, that's really the problem with America today, the age of greed. Is the executive class installed themselves as the most important thing within the company. That it used to be the shareholders. It used to be the customers. It used to be the employees. It used to be the suppliers. Those were your four big things. You know, the shareholders or the financial backers, your employees, your customers, and your suppliers. And all of a sudden, the new regime came in that the executive class was the most important thing. I mean, when I go back to 2008 and the economic crisis that happened there, the entire concept of what the Bush administration was trying to do was Operation Save Christmas Bonus, that the executives had no problems letting their shareholders get tanked. They had no problem with their employees getting laid off. They had no problem with their customers getting cheated. They had no problem with their suppliers getting robbed. But they wanted money so that the Christmas bonuses that they had been promised got paid out. And that's why when the Treasury Secretary under Bush said, oh, give me a ton of money, you can't ask where it goes, just know that it's going to go to these things. It was basically Operation Save Christmas Bonus. Because that was the most important thing. Not the customers, not the shareholders, not the employees. None of that was important. It was all the executives. And that's where our problem lies today. And here is a guy here that feels as if that even though Minnesota had given him everything, that he probably wouldn't have the money without Minnesota here, without all these things. He probably would not have it. And yet he feels as if because the people that keep saying that millionaires and billionaires are better than the rest of us lost in the election, and in turn, we actually have legislation helping the middle and lower class, he's infuriated and he's storming away with his toys. At least that's the narrative of the story I want to take. Kim is in Minneapolis, wanted to chime in. Hey, Kim.
Hey, Matt, long time no speak. I find what you're taking, this is absolutely hilarious. I made a comment similar on next door about this guy. Howie leaving town, and I was going to tie it into 40 years of Reaganomics, which you just succinctly explained, and that's what's led to this decaying society. If you don't like Minnesota, gosh help you, going somewhere else. It's not going to be any better crime or services or bang for your buck for your taxes in Florida, I can guarantee you that.
You don't know, Kim, you want to know what tells me that Minnesota's on the right path? Apparently there's an editorial in Canada that said, nice job, Minnesota. So the Canadians are looking down on us, yeah, saying, hey, you guys did it right down there. It tells exactly. me a lot, right? It tells me a lot right there.
Remember when Mark Dayton was the maverick for raising taxes? And boy, gee, look who's economic performance way up and Wisconsin didn't, and there's tank.
Well,
you know, the rest of the world has figured out health care and how to take care of people, and that's why people are fleeing not to greener pastures in this country, but like to Portugal and Costa Rica and Greece.
And Kim, can I also bring up, let's not forget about Mark Dayton. One of the greatest things that he did was show that you can basically look at these Republicans and tell them to put up or shut up. And he put the budget on the Capitol steps with a highlighter. Where are you cutting? Where are you cutting? Here's the budget. Show me where you're going to cut. And the Republicans were terrified. And isn't that exactly when you talk about whether it's the gun rights or gun restrictions that we should have in this country, and the Republicans say we're not going to do this, but they never tell you what they want to do. And this entire thing with Minnesota and all these bills that got passed, Republicans just scream that it's not what we should do, but they haven't put forward any policy to tell us what they would do. They really don't have anything outside of screaming what they won't do. And that is really, I mean, it really is amazing that Minnesota has been able to peer through this and actually get some success done.
Well, thank gosh for that, because, I mean, you got the Republic of Gilead forming down in the southern states here where it's, you know, the Handmaid's Tale, and women's rights are out the door, and it's absurd.
Well, they basically keep looking at the devil and saying, you know what, I like the cut of that guy's jib. Let's dump Jesus and go with what he's saying. That's who they are. Kim, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. I got to get into the Oath Keepers. Elmer Stuart Rhodes. Elmer has been going. He's going to jail for a long time. And the impact on this on future elections. We'll talk about that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, you should read, if you've not seen this, the Michael Broadcorp thread where Howard Root goes after him, because Root's like, it's going to, you know, what was the term he used here? He's talking about how the polls, he thinks the polls were closing up. Irrefutable point, but who's going to tell Michael Broadcorp and risk the DOA avalanche 3-2-1, basically saying that the Republicans were going to win across the board. Oh, my God. Just hilarious. And he kept coming after Broadcorp. Like I said, I'm wondering if a lot of him leaving is just he was so wrong that it's you know, and okay, we've all known that person. Okay. So have you ever had a friend that told you, I'm a great dancer, and you go on out and you see them dance and you're like, holy God, are they having a seizure?
That's a harsh way to put it, but I know what you're talking about. No,
I'm a great dancer. I love dance. You're like, oh my God, that's not normal. Are limbs supposed to move like that? You know, it's like that's, and then someone tells them, oh, you're not a good dancer, and then it just hits them, and they just kind of turn and walk off the floor. You know, is that what's going on here? I don't know if this is going on with Howard, but I'm wondering if this is what's going on with Howard. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Oath Keepers founder Elmer Stuart Rhodes was sentenced to 18 years behind bars Thursday, 6 months after being convicted of seditious conspiracy in a federal court for his role in January 6, 2021, attack on the U.S. Capitol. The U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta delivered a searing searing and lengthy reproach to Rhodes shortly before handing down his sentence, telling him, you, sir, present an ongoing threat and a peril to this country and to the Republic and all of the very fabric of this democracy. Oath Keepers founder Elmer Stuart Rhodes was sentenced to 18 years behind bars. Due to the large number of defendants, 9, they were split into 2 groups for trial. Jurors convicted 6 of them on seditious conspiracy charges. Rhodes and Meggs are the first to face sentencing. As the ringleader of the Oath Keepers, Rhodes was accused of preparing for potentially large-scale gunfight at the Capitol on January 6, having stockpiled a cache of high-powered weapons at a hotel just outside of Washington. The nation's capital has strict gun laws, but prosecutors said the Oath Keepers wanted to have firearms nearby just in case Trump signaled that he wanted them to use force to return to the president overturn Joe Biden's victory. By the way, I want you to make sure we understand this. remember that Donald Trump was fighting, apparently, allegedly, fighting with the Secret Service people to take control of the Secret Service vehicle and get him back to the Capitol. Was that the signal he was trying to give to the Oath Keepers? What, he wanted to get in there and say, get your guns and shoot the place up? Is that what he was going to say? Rhodes believed that Trump would achieve his goal by invoking the Insurrection Act, which gives the president the authority to send the military to suppress insurrection. But reminder, he wasn't going to send the actual military. He was going to, I guess, deputize these, you know, these militant groups and send them in. The military itself, who did not like this, were ordered directly to stand down. And it wasn't until the governor, the Republican governor of Maryland and the Democratic governor of Virginia at that point, both of them called up their National Guard and sent them on in, that he realized, well, this will be a slaughter if we do not get these guys out of here. While Rhodes did not enter the Capitol himself, prosecuting attorneys said the trial that he had primed his followers to engage in the conflict at the Capitol, observing the chaos from a hill like a battlefield general. Rhodes defended himself in part by arguing he and his Oath Keepers were actually just trying to help law enforcement despite not being asked to do so. Prosecutors said the Oath Keepers as a group have a history of providing unasked for security. He, of course, the judge pointed out that he's completely unrepentant in his actions. He feels that this is just a political prosecution and that just trying to overthrow the government is something that people do. That's what people do, you know. We're just hanging out. What are you going to do today? I don't know. We could go play some Nintendo, or we could, we could overthrow the government. You know, we could do that. He's a horrible human being. And 18 years, I'm sorry, is not enough. That guy needs to go to jail. Now, it is interesting. I saw this, and I'm presuming this is legitimate. Let me see if I can find it here really quick. On the DeSantis, the DeSantis thing, where he basically was. Okay. After the disastrous launch of his campaign last night on Twitter.
We broke the internet.
We broke the internet.
I love that line.
The Onion. I see this picture and sweet God, The Onion, you're brilliant sometimes. Ron DeSantis relaunches presidential campaign from inside a burning Tesla. It's just a picture of him in a burning Tesla. Things are going great. Yeah, your whole campaign's doing great there, Ron. Oh God. That is just brilliant. Apparently he has, when not really launching his campaign very effectively, there was a post out there which said that he would pardon the January 6th people, that he's basically trying to push this idea that is the case. Now, I'm not sure if that's actually something he said. I think it would be kind of political suicide to do so, because most people, especially most military people I know, even the far right guys, have zero tolerance for January 6th people. So you're going to lose a lot more people than pick up there. So I'm not sure if that's something that was put out there, or it could have been something that Trump was involved in, that he was going to try to basically, try to make it seem like he's, going to pardon all these people. But if you want to, I don't care if it's Trump or if it's DeSantis, whoever is the nominee for the Republican Party, a constant question to them is going to be, will you pardon the January 6th insurrectionists? And right now, they don't have any other choice, but to basically go on out there and say, because of the people that they have to address, the people that they have to win over, the people that are going to decide who the Republican nominee is, they want, these are innocent victims, these are innocent people, why in the world would you leave them in jail? I mean, the Marjorie Taylor Greens, who feel as if the black people held in the same prison are being treated exactly as they need to be. But these white people, how dare you throw them into jail? It is, I think that that's going to be the deciding factor. I mean, you're going to, and the Republicans are going to have to, from now until May of next year, talk about pardoning, pardoning, pardoning. And then all of a sudden, one day, they're like, where did you get the idea? We were going to pardon all these guys from January 6th. It really is. This is an issue which I think could actually, you know, really doom them completely.
Yeah, with DeSantis, I didn't know he actually said that, but I guess they all have to go on board with Trump saying we're going to pardon all these January 6th guys.
I don't know if it did. I got
to
be honest.
I bet he will, though, just because he has to keep up with Trump on everything.
And the only reason Trump is running is because, and we talked about this yesterday with Stein, the only reason he's running is because he basically cannot, the only way he's going to avoid jail, the only way that he is going to avoid jail, is by basically getting in there, and that at least he'll be able to temporarily stop it. You know, maybe he'll be able to put people in place that can you know, get rid of evidence and stuff like that. But yeah, it is going to be interesting because that will be a deciding factor in regards to this election. I believe we did have a Supreme Court ruling, and I got to tell you the truth. It's not often I will say this. I agree with the Supreme Court of the United States in regards to this ruling that they put out there in regards to taking a woman's home. Yeah, and I also have to get to another nuclear power leak. And another one, another oopsie over at the Monticello nuclear power plant. Another oopsie. God. And all those guys over there just sit there and just rage hate on Democrats. You've got a leaking nuclear power plant right in your district, next to your district. What are you doing, guys? Anyway, a unanimous Supreme Court on Thursday, a unanimous one, gave a 94-year-old Minneapolis woman a new chance to recoup some of the money after the county kept the entire $40,000 when it sold her condominium over a small unpaid tax bill. The justices ruled that the Hennepin County, Minnesota, violated the constitutional rights of the woman, Geraldine Tyler, by taking her property without paying just compensation. The county had the power to sell Tyler's home to recover the unpaid property taxes, but it could not use the toehold of the tax debt to confiscate more property than was due, said Chief Justice John Roberts, who wrote for the court. Tyler, who now lives in an apartment building for older people, owed $2,300 in unpaid taxes, $2,300, plus interest and penalties, totaling a total of $15,000. When the county took title of the one-bedroom apartment on 2015, the county said she did nothing to hold on to her one-time residence. The apartment sold the next year. Minnesota is among roughly a dozen states in the District of Columbia that allowed local jurisdictions to keep the excess money, according to the Pacific Legal Foundation, a non-for-profit public interest law firm focused on property rights that represented Tyler at the Supreme Court. At least 8,950 homes were sold because of unpaid taxes, and the former owners received little or nothing in those states between 2014 and 2021, according to Pacific Legal. The other states, Alabama, Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Maine, Massachusetts, Nebraska, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, South Dakota, so they run the gamut. It's not something that necessarily is a conservative state or a liberal state. It just seems that there's a lot of states that still have this, that you can confiscate this and then pocket all the money. There's been no explanation why Tyler stopped paying her property taxes when she moved from the condo where she had lived since 1999. She moved for health and safety reasons, said Pacific Legal. The court rejected the county's argument that Tyler could have sold the property and kept whatever was left after paying the mortgage and taxes, refinancing her mortgage to pay for the tax bill or sign up for a tax payment plan. The reality is that, you know, this is something that happens a lot, and it happens. There's a lot of stories, and I thought there was a Supreme Court case on this, and I can't remember off the top of my head what the outcome was on that, where police officers will pull someone over and they basically, in some states, can confiscate everything, take it, sell it, and pocket the money. They can basically steal you blind on the highway. They can just pull up to you, take your car. They say, we think this has been used in a crime, and that's all they have to do. And the case was a guy who had a bunch of cash and was using it he was going to go buy a piece of equipment for his business. They pulled him over. They kept the cash. They kept his car. They kept his truck. They took everything. And they said they legally could do that. You should not be able to do that. Okay. And I think, well, now you can't. You cannot do that. And maybe what this does is, and frankly, can I criticize Hennepin County even further? I don't disagree with what you say there about selling the condo and then paying off some of her debt, or refinancing it and basically getting some of the money to, you know, paying off the debt or calling this up. But how much did you do that? I have been inundated with medical bills since my back was broken in it by a DWI. So what had happened, and just give you a little background here so you can understand where I'm going with this. When you have this, my insurance covered some of the medical up to a certain point. By the way, didn't last long. A few CAT scans, MRIs, that kind of burns away pretty quick. But because it was an accident, a lot of these insurance companies, or not the insurance companies, the hospitals, and it's the various different groups. It's the x-ray technicians. It's the emergency room doctors. It's the hospital themselves. It's the ER nurses. They all basically submit their own bills. Well, once we burned up all the money that was in the insurance fund, the rest of it goes through our health insurance. That's how it's supposed to go, right? But because of the nature of the first claimant, they generally will then come back to you and say, well, we've burned all this money. Here is this bill. And trust me, there have been a few of these bills I've received, which have been fairly astronomical. I mean, you're like, whoa, you guys didn't put this through insurance, did you? The health insurance. So there's been a lot of time, far more time than I wanted to spend on it. I have had to spend in the last few months basically saying, you need to submit this to my health insurance. That's how it goes. And then we'll pay off whatever the differential is. Ta-da! See? Simple, easy, painless. So that's kind of what we've been doing and kind of having to deal with it. But the point is that the hospitals and all these people, they're very quick to say, are you having trouble paying for your bills? If you're having trouble, we have a service available to help you, you know, either get on a payment plan or help you figure out, you know, options you have as far as finance goes. Very, very cordial, very nice. No one's calling up saying, you owe us money. You know, it's not one of those things. But maybe if the Hennepin County had something like that, where, because most of the time, every time that this happens, they call in and say, well, unfortunately, what you've got is you got a paperwork error there that should have been submitted here. And they're very quick to say, oh, we're so sorry. Yes, we'll take care of that. Can I get that insurance number? Great. Thank you very much. And we're done. See, it takes a little bit of an approach and a little bit of effort for you to come out there and say, hey, guess what? We're going to do this. I don't know what Hennepin County was doing, but it doesn't sound like it was there, or at least in this case, maybe it was a case where she didn't understand it, but maybe you should have taken some time before you basically, you know, sold her property and, you know, jammed that money in the pocket. All right. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hey, let's get to the rest of the important news. Apparently, there's an additional smaller radioactive spill at the Monticello Nuclear Power Plant this past weekend.
At least it was smaller, you said.
Hey, thanks, Lenny and Carl. On Sunday, the company had an estimated 300 to 600 gallons of pumped groundwater overflowed from the holding tank on May 21st. The water will be recollected as part of the rest of the company's efforts to recover groundwater contaminated by radioactive material tritium. The recovery efforts have, you know, proceeded smoothly aside from one issue on should you guys be running nuclear power plants? I don't know if you guys should be running nuclear power plants at this point. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205.
Trial and error always works for nuclear power plants.
Hey, try that switch again. Oh, God, no, that's not right. Oh, God. And thank God it's right there on the Mississippi River. Right there on the Mississippi. Upstream from the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. And the country. 952-946-6205. Funny what you can do. This is the Washington Post. I mentioned this last hour. I wanted to mention this here. It's funny what you can do and can't do when your party has one seat majority in the Senate. President Biden got a bipartisan infrastructure bill in the Inflation Reduction Act, the most expansive federal response on guns in decades, and another significant wins. But he still might have Minnesota envy. Democrats there have a trifecta, the governorship, the House, and the Senate. Control over all three branches is crucial, but after the constant wills Senator Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema go along with this drumbeat of Biden's 2 years, the unforgiving one-seat edge ought to have been important too. But the president's party, technically the DFL party in Minnesota, just wrapped up 100 days of legislation on school funding, access to abortion, time off for new parents, marijuana legalization, new restrictions on guns, and a myriad of other Democratic priorities. The GOP understandably sees things differently. They're upset, but needless to say, it's getting a lot of press here. And basically, the Minnesota Dems, on Obama's watch, Democrats saw their numbers in governorship and state legislators hollow out. During these two terms, the party lost more seats at the state level than either party did under any of his predecessors since Dwight D. Eisenhower. The Minnesota Dems proved their point. Alexandra Simon and Connor O'Neill of NBC's KARE ran down some of the major bills. Abortion access, legalized marijuana, largest transportation bill since 2008, adopted new child tax credits, required universal background checks for gun purchases to set up red flag laws, which authorities can confiscate firearms from people deemed to be a threat. It approved free breakfast, free lunch for school children, made it possible for felons to vote after serving their prison time, empowered undocumented immigrants to start to get state driver's licenses, passed tax rebates tied to income, while raising taxes on companies with global income and snipping some deductions from the wealthier individuals. Overall, it was a massive success, and it should be considered that. And by the way, and they named a highway after Prince, which, once again, can we find one of the counties and name it after Prince? I mean, hey, nothing against Father Louis Hennepin and all that, you know, let's bring Christian to the Native American thing, kind of force it on them sort of thing. But, you know, would I mind living in Prince County? Not in all, yeah, in a heartbeat, man.
That has a good flow. Yeah, Prince County, Minnesota.
County, Minnesota. I'd like that idea. Once again, a little refresher for you. We are not here tomorrow. We are not here on Monday. I hope you have a wonderful Memorial Day. Tomorrow, the Paul Nyland interview from Lifeline Ukraine, as well as also we talk about the Caravaggio over at the MIA. Go see that. If you got time this weekend, go see that. That painting is amazing. It's a little more R-rated, I'm going to be honest with you, but it is great. And if you want to hear more about it, listen to the interview tomorrow. Tuesday show, we'll air that on Monday on Labor Day, where we're talking about all the victories that the DFL got in the state of Minnesota. It was a good day, and it's been a good week, and it's been a few good weeks here. I promised this last week. Here we go right now. Got Bob for me? Let's hit it. There you go. We're going to have legalized dope in Minnesota. The smoking light is going to be on soon. Sure. I'm sure no one's going to wait until it's legal. Sure. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. We are back on a Tuesday. Till then, see ya. We're jamming. I want to jam it with you. We're jamming.